Anyway, good discussion. So, what did we talk about for the last two classes?
Fourier series.
Fourier series. And when do we apply a Fourier series?
Periodic signals.
Periodic signals. And what does the spectrum of a periodic signal look like?
Spikes at multiples of the fundamental frequency.
Good. So today, we want to deal with the question, what happens when you don't have a periodic signal? And we're going to introduce something called the Fourier transform, which is a transform that we use to deal with non-periodic signals. And I show these images here because the Fourier transform and things like that can actually be applied to multiple dimensions, not just one-dimensional signals like audio. And if we have some time later in the course, we'll talk about how we can actually do Fourier transforms of images, for example, and get two-dimensional spectrum and things like that.
Whoa.
There's a whole area of signal processing called multidimensional signal processing that deals with signals that are more than one dimension. So images of two dimensions, and there's signals beyond that. And you can compute the spectrum, you can do convolution, you can do all these kinds of things. But today, we want to talk about the Fourier series. So we've introduced the Fourier transform. So we've introduced a Fourier series for analyzing periodic signals. What about aperiodic signals? For example, a pulse instead of a pulse train. And we'll, at the end of today's class, I think have a pretty good idea of how to compare and contrast those two. We can view an aperiodic signal as the limit of a periodic signal as t goes to infinity. So mathematically, that's one of the ways we're going to derive the Fourier transform. When t goes to infinity, the harmonics, which are spaced at multiples of omega 0, which is 2 pi over t, what happens to the distance between harmonics as t becomes large?
It's small.
It's smaller. So what will happen is we'll go from a line spectrum to a continuous spectrum in the limit. So the Fourier series, as t goes to infinity, omega 0 goes to 0, and k omega 0 becomes continuous, the Fourier series becomes the Fourier transform. So, for example, here we have the pulse train that we worked with last time. We computed the Fourier series coefficients and showed that the coefficients of this pulse train were sine k omega 0 t1 over k pi. And we also showed it in terms of omega 0, so I'm just rewriting this in terms of t in the numerator and omega 0 in the denominator. So if we keep t1 fixed and we let t go to infinity, and k omega 0 then becomes a continuous variable omega, and this expression converges to t times c sub k, just putting the t over on the left-hand side, becomes 2 sine omega t1 over omega. So the what was a discrete spectrum becomes a continuous spectrum. Now, this is just a demonstration. We'll actually go through this with more rigor in a moment. But what we'll find, interestingly enough, is that the only difference between a pulse and a pulse train is they both have a spectrum whose envelope is this sine omega over omega shape. The only difference is that in the case of the pulse train, we have samples of that envelope, which is what we call the line spectrum, at frequent multiples of our fundamental, whereas with the pulse, we have simply the continuous function, which is the spectrum. So line spectrum indicates periodic signals, and the continuous spectrum indicates an aperiodic signal, or a typical example of an aperiodic signal is a time-limited signal like a pulse. So let's sort of go ahead and mathematically derive this. assume x of t has a finite duration. So last time we talked about a periodic signal. Now we're going to focus on one period of that signal. So we're going to define some x tilde of t as a periodic extension of x of t. So x tilde of t is what you get when you take x of t and you make it periodic with period t. Now as t, capital T goes to infinity, x tilde of t converges to x of t because these replicas essentially become spaced infinitely far apart. So this is a nice mathematical way of moving between a finite duration signal and a periodic signal. Now we'll recall our Fourier series pair. We had x tilde of t, the Fourier series of any signal we wrote as the sum from k is equal to minus infinity to plus infinity of c sub k e to the jk omega 0 t. And the way we compute the c sub k is to take the integral from minus t over 2 to plus t over 2 of the signal times e to the jk omega 0 t dt. Now, since x of t and x tilde of t are identical over the interval from minus t over 2 to plus t over 2, we can write that this integral of c sub k we can replace for x tilde of t, we can replace x of t. We can replace that with x of t. And then as t goes to infinity, this k omega 0 becomes omega, a continuous variable frequency, and we can then write that the Fourier transform, which we'll call x of j omega, is equal to 1 over t, the integral, t goes to infinity, so this becomes minus infinity to plus infinity, x of t, e to the minus j omega t dt. So this is sort of a derivation of, it's not, it's an overview of derivation of how we go from the Fourier series the Fourier transform. So this is known as the Fourier transform, and it's something we apply to aperiodic signals. And it's fairly easy to compute. We take the signal, we multiply by e to the minus j omega t, and then we integrate over all time from minus infinity to plus infinity.
So it's a lot like the Laplace transform.
It is actually. The Laplace and the Fourier are very much related, and we'll talk about that later in the semester. And in fact, the Laplace, the Fourier, and the Z-transform are all related. The Fourier transform is popular in communication systems because it's with communication systems, we usually are worried about frequency and not so much about time domain. Now, what we want to do next is to derive the synthesis equation. How do you go from the Fourier transform back to the original signal? So, if we recall that x tilde of t can be represented in terms of the sum of the Fourier series coefficients for c sub k's, we can substitute our expression for x of j omega, and we do that here. So now we have the sum from k is equal to minus infinity to plus infinity of this x j omega. We multiply by the t because when we did that limit operation, we moved t to the left hand side for the c sub k's. So we have the sum of this x of j omega 0 e to the jk omega 0. Now we can replace t with omega 0. We can pull out a 2 pi and put an omega 0 here. So this omega 0 over 2 pi is just 1 over t. Then we have x of j omega 0 e to the kj omega 0 t. And now we can let t go to infinity, let omega 0 go to 0, and this sum of omega 0 becomes integral. So we arrive at x of t being 1 over 2 pi times the integral from minus infinity to plus infinity of x of j omega e to the j omega t d omega. So these two equations represent the Fourier series. We have the analysis equation. We go from x of t to x of j omega, and then we have the synthesis equation. We go from x of j omega to x of t. So you'll notice the presence of e to the j omega t, which can also be thought of as e to the st, where s is equal to j omega. Later we'll see this is the Laplace transform, and this is the Fourier transform. Also note the symmetry of these equations. This equation integrates over time, so we integrate over time to get into the frequency domain, and then we integrate over frequency to get into the time domain. And then you'll also notice the change in sign. To take the forward transform, we use a minus e to the j omega. To do the inverse transform, we use a plus e to the j omega. Now the fact that for one we integrate over time and one we integrate over frequency, that's actually going to give us a lot of insight into what the spectrum of signals will look like, what the frequency response, what the Fourier transform of a signal will look like, and how we can relate time domain behavior to frequency response, something that we were talking about a little bit before class. So let's talk about frequency response a little bit. Recall that the impulse response of a continuous time system, h of t, defines the property of the system. So here we have a continuous time, linear time invariant system with impulse response h of t. Now we know that if I apply e to the j omega t to that system, what I get out is h of j omega e to the j omega t. This is something we talked about last when we were talking about convolution. Well, now we can apply the Fourier transform to this problem. We can take x of t and transform it into x of j omega. We can take h of t and transform it into h of j omega. And then we can take y of t and transform it into y of j omega. And this h of j omega becomes essentially a function that describes the frequency response of that system. So much like h of t described the temporal behavior of the system in terms of convolution, h of j omega, the Fourier transform of the impulse response, describes the frequency response of the system, both magnitude and phase. And later we'll show that we can actually get the output y of j omega by multiplying by x of j omega by h of j omega. So we can actually use simple multiplication or algebra in the Fourier transform domain to get outputs of systems. And that'll be a little bit easier than doing convolution. And then later we'll also show that we can actually take the Fourier transform of periodic signals as well. We have to do a little bit of modification of the theory. So, how does this relate to what you've learned in circuit theory? And apparently, Tao's not impressed with your knowledge of circuits. That's what I'm hearing through the grapevine. So tell me what you've learned about circuit theory.
As far as the frequency response?
Just what have you learned about circuits so far?
Do we have 2.5 semesters?
Apparently you've not learned 2.5 semesters worth. Because what we're going to do over the next few weeks is really hopefully bring all this together, make you understand why it is you do these little manipulations and gyrations you do with circuits. It actually makes sense in terms of this theory, and it comes from this theory. So, for example, if I ask you, what is the impedance of this component? What will you tell me?
It depends on the frequency.
What?
Doesn't that depend on the frequency?
Okay.
Yeah,
J omega L, right? You know, good engineers who write, oh, J omega L. And what about this one?
Whatever, J omega C.
Good. Very good. So, if I drew this circuit, and asked you what the transfer function was, what would you tell me?
Whatever J omega C plus J omega L.
You do a simple voltage divider.
Yes, voltage divider.
And compute H, right? You compute what was actually called H of J omega. And under what condition is this valid? When do you use this kind of an analysis?
When omega is greater than zero.
Well, you've done this in the context of particular types of inputs, right?
You have an AC or sinusoidal
input. You have a sinusoidal input, right? So if I wrote A cosine omega 0 t here, you would tell, you could, many of you I think could compute the voltage across here, but could you write an expression for Y of t?
Yeah.
You can actually, but
the voltage divider times X of t, isn't it?
Well, what's the form of Y of t going to be?
The second order differential equation.
What?
The second order equation.
Steady state, just a steady state solution.
You're going to be something sine instead of cosine?
So what if I were to call this a linear time invariant system and ask you to use something you've now learned in this course?
What?
You would tell me the output is of what form?
It's periodic.
It's periodic. How is it going to be different? So the output's going to be cosine something, right? Omega t, right? But how is it going to be different?
Phase shifted.
There's a potential phase shift. And?
Amplitude's
going to be cut. And amplitude shift, right. And how are you going to figure out these values?
Experimental analysis.
What?
Experimental analysis.
Not on a final exam or a class exam. Where do those values come from? How do they relate to what you
analysis?
Just told me about these things?
Use phasor analysis, can't you?
You can, but we'll get to phasor analysis. So this is what I like about engineering education. It shows you what a bad job we do. You know, you've learned all this. No, I mean, and we all do it. You have to learn these things in steps. So you learned all this, but you somehow didn't connect this with this. And that's what we'll do in this course. This is the transfer function, right? So what you can do is evaluate this transfer function at this frequency and get the value of B and the value of phi. That's one way that you would get the exact form of this. Now another way, some of you mentioned, was to use phasors. Phasors and impedances are really kind of the same thing. Now, all of this actually comes from Fourier transform analysis. Now, you didn't learn it that way, but that's essentially what it is. It's dealing with this circuit, this end-to-end system, using a Fourier transform analysis. Now, you may also remember when you did transient responses, later we'll see transient responses can be encapsulated in what we call a Laplace transform, where you get both the transient and the steady state response in one shot. And we'll spend time this semester talking about that. So the Fourier transform is why it's essentially your old friend of circuit analysis, because these components are being represented essentially in the Fourier transform domain. And we'll work some examples in a moment later. I don't know if they're in this lecture or next lecture, but we'll connect these two in a concrete way with some examples. But first we need to confuse you with a little more obscure mathematics. So let's talk about the existence of the Fourier transform. Under what conditions does this transform exist? X of t can be infinite in duration, but it must satisfy these conditions. It has to be finite energy, which means that the magnitude of x of t squared has to be less than infinity. That integrated over from minus infinity to plus infinity.
So basically the function can't have undefined values?
Can't have what?
Undefined values, like divide by zero errors or something like
that? Well, this does not mean that the amplitude cannot be infinite, but it just has to do that for a short enough amount of time to say it goes bounded. Now, mathematicians can think of all sorts of interesting functions.
That integral is bounded by negative infinity and positive infinity.
I'm sorry?
The integral is bounded by negative infinity and positive infinity.
The integral is over this time. So I think the question is...
Is that the magnitude of the signal squared?
It's the magnitude squared, right?
Okay.
But it's integrated, right?
Right.
Right.
So it does something like an impulse function. What is the amplitude?
I was trying to think of what kind of amplitude.
It's infinite. But it's infinitely short.
But it's not infinite, right?
The amplitude of an impulse function is infinite.
Mathematically.
But I mean, it's not defined to be infinite. Right.
That's the
definition.
No, it's
defined to be infinite.
The integral under it is area one, but like the amplitude is.
But its amplitude is infinite.
Right. Yeah, that's the definition. There's two definitions.
So anyway, like I said, we're trying to confuse you here. But for those of you who are going to go on to careers as theoretical mathematicians, you'll get all excited about this kind of stuff. The Dirichlet conditions. also hold, and so this sort of describes what types of allowable discontinuities can occur in the signal, and impulses actually do satisfy these conditions. So by allowing impulses, we can actually represent even more signals. And that's going to allow us to actually represent periodic signals with the Fourier transform and pulses. And because we can represent pulses, then we can actually talk about the spectrum of digital signals. So later in the semester, we'll extend this kind of an analysis to discrete time systems. And in a couple slides or lecture, we'll talk about the Fourier transform of periodic signals, which technically don't satisfy this condition, but nevertheless we can sort of fake it to some extent. So let's look at some simple examples that will give us a lot of insight into the properties of this transform. And in general, you know, when I work examples in class, the examples are selected because they show fundamental behavior of the transform or topic that we're talking about. So make sure, you know, when you study the slides that you do understand why we're talking about these examples. So the first one we want to look at is x of t being equal to delta of t. Delta of t, as we've talked about, is a very important signal for linear system analysis. So x of j omega is the integral from minus infinity to plus infinity of delta of t e to the minus j omega t. Now, what do we know about delta of t times e to the j omega t? We talked about something called the sifting property.
All you get out of it is e to the minus j t.
All you get out of the function evaluated at this time, right?
Right.
So the integral and the value of, and the only time this is non-zero is at zero, the value of this at zero is
one.
So the whole integral is equal to one. Now, let's think about that for a moment. We're having this nice discussion before class about frequency response and why you should go and buy those $100 cables with gold-plated ends and all that cool stuff, which I never do personally. I can't afford it. But what is the frequency response of this signal?
Unity.
This is essentially the frequency response, right?
Right.
What is the frequency response of this signal? What does this equation mean in terms of frequency response?
It's the same for every frequency.
Right, so if you had to draw a picture of that.
No gain, no attenuation.
If we looked at, for example, the magnitude of x of j omega as a function of omega, what would it look like?
Straight line at one.
So, would you say that that signal has a very large bandwidth, that it occupies a large chunk of the frequency spectrum, or a very small bandwidth?
Well,
try again.
Large.
Why large? Because this has energy at all frequencies. 1 megahertz, 10 megahertz, 10 gigahertz, terahertz or picahertz or... This signal represents a very rapid transition in the time domain. That produces what in the frequency domain? A very wide spectrum. Signals that are narrow in the time domain have wide spectrums. Signals that are wide in the time domain have narrow spectrum. So what do you think the spectrum of a sine wave, which is very wide in the time domain, is going to look like?
It's just a single point.
It's just a pulse in the frequency domain. So this is what we call duality, and we're going to see that over and over with the Fourier transform. Okay, so that's, you know, the lessons to be learned from that example. Next example, delta t minus t zero. This is our surround sound example. We take x of j omega is equal to the integral from minus infinity to plus infinity of delta of t minus t zero e to the minus j omega t. And again, using the sifting property, we note that the product of these two functions is non-zero only when t is equal to t zero. So this whole integral simplifies to e to the minus j omega t zero. All right, so I said this is the surround sound example. What does this have to do with phase shift? Well, this is delay in the time delay. How would you characterize the spectrum of this function? Well, let's talk first about the magnitude. The magnitude of x of e of j omega is equal to what in this case? The magnitude of e to the minus j omega t zero.
Is it going to be 1?
It's going to be 1. Why? How did we visualize e to the jx?
It's a unit vector.
A unit vector, right? That kind of spins. But it always has a magnitude of 1. So this has a magnitude of 1. Well, what else is there? What about the phase? What about the angle of this?
It's going to vary depending on t.
The angle of this signal is essentially omega t zero in radians, minus omega t zero. What happens as you increase time delay?
You get more phase shift.
You just get more phase shift. So this is essentially how surround sound works. By playing with time delays and phase, you can create you can change where the direction it seems the sound is coming from. For example, when you're talking about a stereo application or a four-speaker or five-speaker application.
Did they have to do the same thing like at a large outdoor concert with the speakers halfway into the crowd?
Yeah, I don't know the details of that. We have some guys from PB who can probably tell us all about that, but concert setups have gotten pretty sophisticated the way they...
They have DSP processors and PA that can measure, and you can actually put a mic out, send the pulse, and it'll delay everything with the sync ability.
Right.
So when you're standing in the back, it all sounds like a continuous signal coming in.
That's insane.
And they do that with large numbers of speakers now, I think, and some of it's really state of the art.
Yeah. You can buy a $300 home stereo receiver that'll do that. It comes with its own reference mic.
Right. That I'm familiar with. In fact, you'll typically pick a point in the room where you want to sit.
Right.
And you'll optimize the stereo so it produces the right sound field at that point. Now, there's a little bit of danger in that because if you're just off center from that, you're not going to get the same kind of sound field. So.
Right.
Later we'll talk about noise cancellation algorithms that had that problem, that they cancel noise really nicely here and then they basically blow your eardrums out if you sit over here like 2 feet from that point. So this kind of a property is used quite a lot, but this is something we'll hit on repeatedly this semester. Time delay is phase delay. It does not distort the magnitude spectrum at all. Exponential functions. What is the impulse response of this circuit? If I apply a pulse to this circuit, what do I get as output?
Gradual spike.
What is the impulse response?
Gradual decay.
Yeah, it's an exponential decay.
Exponential decay. Many, many systems in the real world are essentially exponential decay. So if we take e to the minus at u of t, and we take the Fourier transform of that, we have the integral from minus infinity to plus infinity, x of t e to the minus j omega t. This is 0 for t less than 0. So we're going to take the integral from 0 to plus infinity of e to the minus at, e to the minus j omega t dt. This we can write as e to the minus a plus j omega t. So we can integrate this. Now this is not, even though this has a complex value in it, the integral of this is just e to the minus a plus j omega t, e to the minus quantity a plus j omega times t over the argument a plus j omega. And we can evaluate that from 0 to infinity, and note that when t is equal to infinity, what happens to this term?
Goes to 0.
This term goes to 0, so we just have 1 over a plus j omega. And what is the frequency response of this? Well, the magnitude function is just going to be 1 over the square root of a squared plus omega squared, and the phase function is just going to be minus the inverse tangent of omega over a. So the magnitude function looks like this, where the 3 dB point actually occurs at a frequency of a radians. The phase function looks like this. It's an inverse tangent type function, and it goes through a zero crossing at zero and achieves pi over 4 at minus a and minus pi over 4 at a. So if you had to call it, if we call this thing a filter, and you've seen filters, I think, in your previous courses, though maybe not formally defined what they are, how would you characterize this in terms of being a filter?
Bandpass.
Try again. It is a band pass, but this is actually zero.
Ah, okay, well then it's high pass.
Low pass.
Oh, yeah, okay.
This is frequency zero, right?
It attenuates
higher frequencies.
Oh, it's frequency zero.
Yeah. Oh, that's
right. So this is a low pass filter. This is a low pass filter. Mm-hmm. many, many systems, and most systems in life are low-pass filters. We were talking about hearing, vision, and unfortunately, as you get older, this thing attenuates more. So the human body actually is built out of a lot of systems that function like low-pass filters. The impulse response of a low-pass filter is e to the minus at, and we can tune the frequency response by simply adjusting this parameter a. Your cruise control also, to some extent, works this way, where they adjust the value of a, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the semester when we get to control systems. The next example I want to work, okay, so that, so we did impulse, we did time phase delay, time delay, we did exponential low-pass filter. Now we want to talk about pulse. Just a single pulse that exists from minus T1 to plus T1. We have the integral from minus T1 plus T1 of e to the minus j omega t dt. And if you work through the details of that, that can be shown to be 2 times sine omega T1 over omega. If you plot this as a function of frequency, what you get is a function which looks like this. This is what we call a sine x over x function. Its envelope, its amplitude decreases with frequency, but it also goes through these zero crossings at frequencies of pi over T1 and multiples of that. And you'll notice that the width of this thing is related to the width of this thing. So, first of all, if you had to describe this in terms of a filter, how would you describe it? Low pass or high pass? This is low pass because it's attenuating higher frequencies. The larger frequency gets, the less the amplitude. Now, as you increase the width of this pulse, as you make T1 greater, what do you think is going to happen to this picture?
It shrinks towards the middle.
It's going to shrink. This becomes narrower as you increase T1. So the wider you make this in the time domain, the narrower you make this in the frequency domain. The narrower you make this in the time domain, the wider you make this in the frequency domain. That's why when you try to generate very, very short pulses in the lab, and you look at them in your circuits or in the scopes, they always look rounded, because those high frequencies are getting attenuated. So this shape, this sine x over x function, is something that we'll see quite a lot this semester. A couple interesting, sort of useful facts about continuous time Fourier transform. If you take the average of the signal in the time domain, by you integrate over all of time, what you get is the Fourier transform evaluated at frequency equal to zero. The average value of the signal in the time domain is just the DC value, which is what's represented by the value of the transform at frequency zero. So, for example, if we take the case of this pulse, if we integrate over time, well, the average value of this pulse is just 1 times the width 2t1, and that's equal to x of 0. So the value of the Fourier transform at frequency 0 is just the average value of that pulse. Another interesting thing, and later we'll formally state this, is that the integral across all of frequency gives you the value of the signal at time zero. And we demonstrate that over here. We'll come back to this because the relationship between time and frequency is a very important characteristic of the Fourier transform. Let me just check ahead here. So the next signal that we want to look at is x of t is equal to e to the minus at squared. This is often called a Gaussian pulse. And it has it has a shape that looks like this. And if you work through the math on this, plugging in x of t and integrating, fairly straightforward, the resulting transform that you get has this form of the square root of pi over a, e to the minus omega squared over 4a, which, if you notice, is also a Gaussian shape. So we started with a Gaussian shape, we end up with a Gaussian shape, and that's kind of an interesting property of these Gaussian pulses. And that's a concept that's used throughout a lot of areas of science, physics, statistics, and such. But its spectrum has a Gaussian shape. And you can control the width of the spectrum by adjusting the value of A, of course.
What exactly does it, keep mentioning the uncertainty principle?
That comes from physics.
Mm-hmm.
And this duality of time and frequency is a kind of a basic part of what the uncertainty principle is all about.
Okay.
If you know where something, and I don't know if you were reading, in fact, there was an interesting article on CNN yesterday, I think it was, about teleportation.
The
concept about whether something can be localized in time and space, and that's sort of what the uncertainty principle is all about. Now, with periodic signals, we can actually we can actually use the Fourier transform on periodic signals. I'm not going to go into the details of this semester, but we'll use the result, which is, suppose that the Fourier transform is a pulse function, delta of omega minus omega zero. If we apply that to the inverse Fourier transform, what we get is 1 over 2 pi e to the j omega zero t. And this is a signal which is periodic in t time with frequency omega zero. So that tells us that if I scale this by 2 pi, I can write the relationship that the Fourier transform of e to the j omega zero t is 2 pi delta of omega minus omega zero. Now, what kind of signal is e to the j omega zero t? Well, it's a complex signal. Its real part is a cosine, and its imaginary part is a sine. So we can use this result to generate the Fourier transforms for sines and cosines. And what it tells us is that when we have a periodic signal like this, its spectrum simply consists of an impulse function located at omega zero. So it's broad in the time domain and very narrow in the frequency domain. And in fact, we can show that if we have a signal x of t which is periodic, and we take the Fourier transform of that, the Fourier series of that signal, we can then apply the Fourier transform, because this is now just a weighted sum of these exponentials, and we can write that the Fourier transform of a periodic signal is just a weighted sum of these delta functions, spaced at multiples k omega zero. Multiples are the fundamental frequency. So periodic signals have a line spectrum, and the only thing you need to worry about with the line spectrum is what the amplitude of each one of those impulses are. So we can use that result to generate Fourier transforms for sines and cosines. So here, as an example, we can write cosine omega zero t as 1 half e to the j omega zero t plus 1 half e to the minus j omega zero t. We can then take the Fourier transform of that and write it as pi times delta of omega minus omega zero plus pi of delta omega plus omega zero. And that gives us a line spectrum which looks like this. So this is the spectrum of a cosine signal. It has only two non-zero values at minus omega zero and plus omega zero. Now another interesting signal that we can look at is our impulse train. The sum of delta functions, time delayed by nt. This is the basics of what we call a digital signal. We can compute the Fourier series coefficients, and we can write this as a Fourier series. X of t is equal to the sum from k is equal to minus infinity to plus infinity of a sub k to the jk omega 0 t. The a sub k's we can compute by simply using our formula for the Fourier series. And since x of t is non-zero at only one point, zero, we can write this as 1 over t. So this is the Fourier series of this pulse train. We can take the Fourier transform of this and write that we have, since now we've just got a sum of these exponentials, we can write this as 2 pi over t times delta of omega minus, and now we just have k omega 0 or k 2 pi over t. So we started with a pulse train, and we get a pulse train in the frequency domain. And both are in the time domain, the pulse train has a period t. In the frequency domain, the pulse train has a period 2 pi over t. So if I increase t, the pulses become spaced wider in the time domain and narrower in the frequency domain. If I decrease t, I make the pulses closer in the time domain, the frequency response becomes wider in the frequency domain. So this is a sort of experimental proof of what sampling is all about. The faster you sample, the more bandwidth you need to represent that signal. So what we've done today is we've motivated the Fourier transform by starting with the Fourier series and increasing t out to infinity, and there, by doing that we derived the analysis and synthesis equations. We then looked at some examples and we applied this to linear time invariant systems. And we also introduced the Fourier transform of periodic signals and applied this to a cosine wave and a pulse train, which were both periodic. So next class, we will derive some properties of this transform and show you that it behaves the same way Fourier series does with respect to things like linearity and such. Okay, we'll see you on Monday.